Output PDX, the show about business, technology, and creativity in the Bridge City. I'm Haley Platt. Today's guest is Angela Jackson from Portland Seed Fund. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. Looking forward to chatting with you. Yeah. So you've been helping entrepreneurs develop and grow their companies, really, for your entire career. And I basically, what I read is that if you're a startup, you want Angela Jackson in your corner, really.
That's very sweet.
And I'm sure there's some truth to that. But I want to know how you got started in the startup world.
Sure. Well, it got started a lot sooner than you might imagine. Hmm. Sort of what I did as a kid. So I was the daughter of an entrepreneur.
Okay.
My next door neighbor was the son of an entrepreneur. And I'm old enough that there weren't play dates. People, parents just let their kids out on the street.
And, sure.
You know, as long as you were seen maybe once in a 24-hour period and home by dark, it all was well.
Right.
So all the kids would flush out on the street, and we would sort of meet and say, what are we going to do today? And there was always some crazy business that kept us entertained for hours. So forget Kool-Aid stands. That was just beginner's
right.
stuff.
Child's play.
Yeah.
let
some other kid do that. We had mini golf courses. We had an advertising company. We had a public library, believe it or not. That was interesting.
So
every kid was either like a customer or an employee. We would just hatch these businesses. So, I was a lot older till I finally realized, you do what your parents do. I was just kind of a family member who got exposed to that. And I think what's most important about that is comfortable with risk, calculated risk.
Well, you watched it.
Yes.
You were groomed without really knowing you were being groomed.
Right.
Right?
And honestly, I was 30 plus when I was like, oh, this is why this comes naturally and easy to me. I didn't honestly make the connection. And my interest as a person didn't turn to business till, late 20s, early 30s.
Sure.
I was more interested in solving problems, starting important things, which actually is startup, but... Again, I was sort of wired on, I'm not taking over the family business, therefore I must not be a business person.
Right.
But, that is what innovation and entrepreneurship is seeing a problem, solving it, and I was doing a ton of that, even from the time on the block.
Right, right. So. Yeah, like you were always meant to do what you're doing, right?
Yeah, it just took me a while to figure that out.
Well, sure, and sometimes that's, when we think about our childhood and the things we loved, sometimes it's like aha,
Yeah.
But so you
those
ended
are important
up,
clues.
Yeah, you followed through with that. Okay, so then how did you break into the startup world?
Sure.
Then?
So let's see. My husband and I moved here in 1992.
Okay.
At the time, I started and ran a nonprofit from scratch. At the time, I was interested in the thing that the nonprofit did. But as I got into it, I noticed myself much more interested in growing the company. Creating jobs. I loved the challenge of raising all the money, creating the case and the statement. And I kind of grew out of the mission of the nonprofit, and I got much more interested in starting stuff.
Okay.
But you get an appetite for it.
Sure.
And so that's really, it's not a thing you necessarily go to school to learn.
Right.
Early stage companies are really almost talent scouting. You have to really monitor trends and people, because it's people who make things great. It's people who use products.
Right.
Anything that is strictly spreadsheet-based, at that early stage, it's just not the place to start, or Gartner reports or whatever. It's,
right.
As companies get more embedded in a particular market, that stuff becomes more important in later stage deals. So venture capital through private equity, the later stage investments, they will look and those become very important. But again, at the beginning, it's a lot of gut. It's a lot of people skills and really understanding how big is the market and keeping things capital efficient.
Right.
Because I don't know much, but I do know this.
Yeah.
That first idea is probably wrong. It is wrong. 100% of the time. Maybe it's only a little bit wrong, or it might be a lot wrong. But you want enough gas in the tank that you can have a few tries at it before you run out of money or, energy to execute on something.
Or both.
Right? Or both.
So, your story and your background is really interesting. And so it was, good to learn that about you. But I want to also then talk about how startups have changed. Like, what's that history? Right? And so how have they changed and progressed? But also, what are the trends that you are seeing?
Sure. So let's start with the past. I think it was a little bit of a logjam around here back in 2007. There wasn't a lot of, the economy wasn't great. There wasn't a lot of angel investment activity.
Right.
And frankly, there weren't a lot of great companies being started.
Right.
And so the conversation went into the chicken and egg. Investors mm-hmm. would say, well, if there was a good company, I'd write a check.
Right.
And good entrepreneurs were getting frustrated because check writing was very slow.
Right.
So Oregon Angel Fund started to break that free, but you know, just like any marketplace, you need more than one provider and one customer
sure.
to create a robust marketplace.
Right.
So it wasn't until maybe a few years later where there were more angels participating, other actors coming in, so that the check writers had to step up their game and get a little faster.
Right. Well, it's more of a cycle, right?
A little more volume, right. And I noticed around the time we started Portland Seed Fund in 2010, my partner and I, we noticed a change where entrepreneurs had stopped leaving for the Bay Area. That was a common refrain.
Okay.
Because they couldn't find money here.
Right.
And we were sort of just like a tide goes out, and mm-hmm. then there's that slack period, and then before it comes in. We noticed that stopped. It hadn't really started to come in yet. But over these last years, mm-hmm. That trend has really reversed. First led by the investors.
Okay.
Increasingly, Silicon Valley investors were willing to come here, mm-hmm. find companies and write checks, sit on boards. They would come here, love it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would ask their CEOs, hey, can you introduce me to some more companies you think I should look at? They would maybe make additional investments. And step by step, this sort of hand-to-hand combat mm-hmm. thing happened. And again, this is partially because we are such a collaborative ecosystem, that those
right.
CEOs would take the time to do other introductions
right.
and not view that as competitive.
Right.
But now, unequivocally, there are people from the Bay Area choosing to move here to build their companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that, honestly, I don't know that we would have imagined that back
right.
in 2007.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about Portland Seed Fund.
Okay.
Just want to know more about what you do there.
Okay.
And then if you have any specific success stories that have launched through your programs,
sure.
I'd love to hear about that too.
You know, we are coming up on our fifth year, which is hard to believe.
Yeah.
Well, this is our fifth year of operation. We've made 74 investments
wow.
in startup
companies.
In
5 years?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And, you know, we have invested in really some incredibly talented entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the ones that I think we're most proud of is, you've probably heard of Globe Sherpa.
Mm-hmm.
Globe Sherpa was acquired by a subsidiary. It ended up as part of a subsidiary of Daimler.
Okay.
And I know
yeah.
Daimler has, someone from Daimler has spoken to you.
Yeah.
So Daimler has a division called Moval,
okay.
which is very interested in what we call the last mile.
Mm-hmm.
Globe Sherpa partnering with TriMet to start,
mm-hmm.
doing ticketing for transit on your mobile phone. You know, this is a giant global economy that
yeah.
is very transit heavy. They have incredible opportunity. So the fact that Daimler, or a subsidiary of, acquired them, it, you know, I think the sky's the limit for that company.
Sure.
And knowing that team from the time that they were Portland State University masters and business students,
mm-hmm.
That team is a wonderful team. It's just a great Portland story.
Yeah.
You know, they met at PSU. They fleshed out their idea, their first iteration, which was not the one that ultimately
right.
they
well,
went with.
Well, which you said, that the first one's always a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's kind of like a turn and burn. Like,
mm-hmm.
okay, next. And it was related, but not the right exact idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they are now, you know, top leadership at Daimler North America, the two founders.
Right.
And they're hiring like crazy. They're still in Portland.
Right.
What a difference from, say, 10 years ago.
Sure.
Where it was just assumed that companies would, you know,
go.
Acquire and leave.
Yeah.
You know.
And for you, that must be so rewarding to have seen that from inception.
Absolutely.
To growth. You know, I mean, I think
absolutely.
That's one of the things. I want to know what that's like for you. Like, that must be so just gratifying to see that.
It is. And I want to, in this particular case, give a shout out for my partner, Jim,
mm-hmm.
who was a mentor, a volunteer mentor for their college project
mm-hmm.
and knew Nat and Michael going way back then.
Mm-hmm.
And also a shout out for the business professors at PSU
mm-hmm.
who kind of nurtured those very early iterations when they were just students.
Right. Want to shift gears a little bit and talk
mm-hmm.
about Portland and why Portland is such a great place for
sure.
startups. You touched on it, but so why is it smart for people to bring their startups here?
Oh, absolutely. There are so many cities that on paper might look like a similar set of attributes, but I think when you're on the ground here, I partially credit our urban planning vision
mm-hmm.
of, we've really gone through a tremendous Europeanization
mm-hmm.
through our transit-oriented development and main streets and
mm-hmm.
It's this human scale, rich, vibrant culture that is very attractive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you're in a money war and sometimes you're in a talent war. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the money war,
right,
where there just wasn't.
Right.
You know, we now have adequate, we could always have more, but we have adequate seed capital flowing.
Okay.
What's getting tighter is talent.
Mm.
And
okay,
talent recruiting is very competitive. So we are, as I'm sure you know, for the third year, we had been the most moved to city.
Mm-hmm.
When you really dissect those demographics, these are not retirees.
No.
These are largely young, creative people looking to come start something.
Yeah.
This is what will keep our companies here growing and thriving, mm-hmm, is the steady supply of new entrants.
And then I kind of want to end just on, if you had words of wisdom that you would share with people who are considering starting up their own,
mm-hmm,
company, right?
Right. Okay, many words of wisdom.
Okay.
So let me distill to just a couple.
Yeah, just a couple. Your favorites.
It's going to be 10 times harder than you even imagine, even if you think you're being conservative.
Okay.
And it's going to take probably 5 times as long as you think. So a really fair question to ask yourself is, can I see myself doing this for 10 years?
Okay.
Now, it may be that you don't go all 10, but I think we only read about the things in the paper that don't happen very much,
sure,
right? You know, oh, we worked on something for 6 months, and
right,
then they bought it for $4 billion.
Yeah.
You know, that...
Yeah.
The
overnight
that was
success
in the paper,
stories.
Right.
Yes.
It's because it was rare. Most other things happen with a ton of hard work, a lot of disappointments. And, you know, if you need money, I always like to say, are you a job maker or a job taker?
Okay.
You know, go work for a startup if you need that salary. But investors, if you go to investors, they will have certain expectations about what you do with the precious cash.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be paying the core team a lot of dough,
right,
for a very long time.
Right.
So be
ready
for
that.
Can you do that? And if the answer is no, that's fine. There's no shame in that. Knowing, you know, the impact of what you're about to do and deciding if you're on that boat or not is just, it's really smart,
right,
decision making.
Angela, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your time with me today.
Thank you, Haley. It was such a pleasure.
I'm so glad. Thanks. And that concludes this episode of Output PDX. Thanks for watching.